Welcome to the Iowa Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, season's over. Go on vacation.
Usually I'm really sad. I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty pumped. I was pretty thrilled when I got back into Denver. Had the windows down in my car, was looking at the mountains and like thinking about going hiking. Like the whole summer's in front of us outside of the draft, free agency, and FIBA.
Yeah, that was the thing. It was like, all right, I think if we had a more competitive series, we'd be like, no, let's go seven, right? But the Heat were just getting their teeth kicked in, and at that point, you just want it over. Because it wasn't compelling anymore, it was just like, all right, the Spurs are the best team in the league. Let's just crown them. And then it gets to, yeah, we'll get a couple of days off. Well, we've got draft preparation. Oh, after that, we've got, you know, LeBron and Carmelo's decision, and we have FIBA. We should get a good 3 weeks off this summer.
Yeah, at some point. Like a weekend, maybe a good. We'll get a Tuesday. We'll get a great solid Tuesday.
Oh my God, that Tuesday! I'm doing nothing. I can't wait for that Tuesday.
And part of it, this is unrelated to the Spurs winning. It's a little related to the Spurs winning, but and you know, I've talked about this. Like the season sucked. Like Kobe got hurt. Rose got hurt. Like we didn't have any sort of compelling trades. The Rockets were like, oh, they've got Dwight Harden and James Harden. They're good. You know, like the Blazers were good for a few months, which will piss off their fans. The Pacers were good for a few months.
The Knicks and the Nets were disappointing. And the Nets, you understood because they lost Brook Lopez and all that stuff. Like it was a fun train wreck for a couple of months, but then after that it just got boring.
Yeah. Like the East was horrific. The West was super competitive. Like the Middle West was really interesting. That was the most interesting part of the season for me was Memphis, Dallas, Phoenix. That was really interesting to me. Everything else was kind of – and like whether the Clippers could make the jump.
Right.
That was the other kind of interesting thing. And then like they didn't. So I was like not really all that fascinating.
It was a lot like – I'm just going to complain about something for real quick. I have not been happy with the season of Louis. And this is related to the Clippers thing. I just watched the 90-minute, like, in the woods, don't smoke pot episode for his daughters. And the entire time I'm like, all right, there's got to be a payoff. There's got to be a payoff. He wouldn't have a 90-minute episode without a payoff. And then there was no payoff. And that's what the Clippers felt like. It was like this, all right, I think they can do it. I think they can do it. I think they can do it. Oh, no, they didn't do it. There wasn't a good payoff other than the fact that Donald Sterling is no longer, well, he's still involved, but he'll eventually no longer be involved. So like that's like the only payoff, and it, I don't know, it kind of, it's frustrating that there's not enough there for me to be the annoying Louis fan right now and be like, well, I just don't think you understand what's going on with the show, or maybe you should read this and then watch the Clippers season. Like, no, there's just no payoff, and maybe there'll be a payoff next season, but this season there's just no payoff.
And Spurs fans loved it, and that's awesome for them. Like they. I like thinking about how good teams are in relative context.
Yeah.
Because like within a season, I think it's interesting to look at, like that to me is something that I like doing. Like where was this team at in relation to the entire season? Like it was kind of, like the Heat last year were clearly the best team. The Spurs this year were clearly the best team overall.
Right.
To an amazing degree. But looking at, you know, like I started thinking, is this team better? Like this, would this team have whipped Kobe and Shaq's Lakers? And I hear you, Lakers. I mean, no, because of Kobe and Shaq. But I kind of think they might have, because y'all had Rick Fox. Like that was one of your key players was Rick Fox and like Mark Madsen and.
I will say this, like, I guess it also depends on the rules we're playing with, right?
Right. Like, there's a whole bunch of context here.
Yeah.
Let's even take it outside of if they played each other, because those things are really weird. Just in terms of overall what they achieved, like, I feel like the Spurs achieved something this season that's pretty rare, which is they came back from losing the NBA Finals, which I paid a lot of attention to last year in terms of saying there's no way they can do it. They got over one of the most devastating losses in NBA Finals history. They won the most games in the league, secured the number one seed, were the best overall team while resting starters. We'll talk about the Mavs series in a second because I want to talk about that. Breezed through basically the 2 second rounds. They had a little bit of a bump versus the Thunder, but overall they really controlled those four games that they won, and then clocked the two-time defending champions in the finals. That is an amazing run.
It is, and all right, I've got a new theory that I just came up with. Would it shock you if Greg Popovich brainwashed them in training camp? Like, if he just said, look, guys, last season happened, watch this watch sway back and forth. By the way, last season never happened. Let's just go. The people are going to ask you about it. You can pretend you know that you know, tragedy, basketball tragedy on the court for you happened, but ultimately we're just going to go out and be the best team in the world. I really think that happened.
Yeah, like it's incredible to have seen that team, and I didn't get a chance to ride on it because of a number of reasons, but that was the most impressive thing to me, because I wrote this last year. I was like, there's no way. I was like, they just lost their first finals. They had never lost a finals. They just lost their first finals. They suffered this unbelievable loss. The core's getting older. Manu looks done. They can't really improve the team. Like, there's no way. Like, there's no way that they come back from this. And they not only did they, but they kicked everyone's ass in doing it.
Yeah. And all right, let's talk about that Mavericks series, because now the instant thing that just drives me crazy, people are like, so now are the Mavericks the second best team in the league? Because they gave them the hard stuff. No, that's not how this works. Yes, the Mavericks gave them trouble. The Spurs also didn't really play their style of basketball, which some of that was related to the Mavs, and some of that was related to just decisions they made on the court. Congratulations to the Mavericks for giving them a hard time, but they were never going to lose that series.
Yeah, you know, you can say this about any series. I guess here's how I would say it. You have to follow the entire season, know the two teams very well, have paid attention to all this, and then take each series within context. Because in the Mavericks series, I pretty much chalk this up to sometimes things happen.
Yeah.
Like, that could have happened in the finals. Like, the Heat could have won despite not being a better team, because sometimes things happen. That's not what happened here. The best team won because they actually faced each other, and based off of how they play, one team's play and talent was superior to the others. But in the Mavericks series, that defense is not how the Mavericks play defense. That offense really isn't how the Mavericks play offense. How good those guys played is not really indicative of who they are.
Right.
They had a few good games, and that's awesome for them. They get to feel good about themselves, because the reality is they loaded up for a run that netted them an 8th seed and a couple of games in the playoffs and a crazy Vince Carter game winner to extend it. And other than
I forgot about that shot. That was fun.
Great. That was a great shot.
Shot was fun.
But I'm not going to look – like, I don't know how you look at that and say we're really building something here, especially when Cuban specifically built the contract so they can tear everything down.
Right.
Like, you know, like they – I think that the sense I get from the Mavericks is that they realize we have something here, but we need something else too. So, yes. Like, there's a lot to there's a lot to be done in Dallas, but I don't take away from that series that Dallas was really this underrated. Like, no. Like, I watched that team play defense most of the year. I catch a ton of Dallas games. I love Dallas' broadcast. I like their uniform.
Arguably the best broadcast in the league.
Yeah.
That Dallas broadcast is fantastic.
And so, like, I knew that team pretty well, despite what Mavs fans thought. They're like, you don't know this team. And I was like, no, I've watched you not defend for...
Right, I mean, like, this was a, you know, a here's some analysis joke that I was doing all the season, but it was true. Like, the Mavericks designed their team to score more points than you. Like, they were awful defensively. They were really bad. But their offense was incredible. And so they were able to sustain throughout the season and get the 8th seed.
Yeah, and they played... They had veterans who set them up to play great defense. Sean Marion, Vince Carter.
Yeah, they played phenomenal.
They played really great. Monte stepped it up. Monte played really well.
Devin Harris had a great year.
Yeah, the odds are not great that Monte is going to play like that again, but we'll see. And you know, if they get a wing defender and a rim protector, I think that they could be in pretty good shape. You can, especially
absolutely.
If they...
Absolutely. I mean, that team played Sam Dallenberg and Dwan Blair.
Yeah, especially if they figure out a way to balance the point guard stuff, because that's still something that really sticks with me, is I'm like, you need Calderon's offense, but you also need Devin Harris's defense. Like, I know this sounds crazy. I legitimately do think about, like, what if they just traded Monte and they just started Calderon and Harris? Like,
I would like that. I'd love Calderon this year. I really did.
He made some his passing is what I never think of because of how much his defense sticks in my craw. But then I watch him pass, and I'm like, God, that guy's got great vision and touch. Like,
yeah,
that's a guy who, you know what Calderon is? Calderon is for an entire game what the Spurs point guards are for, like, non-Tony Parker, for like a good 7 minutes a game.
Yeah,
like what Patty Mills is able to do in short stretches, Calderon does the entire game.
Yeah, he's an excellent role player. Like, you don't want him as a key guy. But I think, like, okay, yeah, he sucks at defense. He's awful, awful, awful at defense. But his shooting is so good and his decision-making with passing is so good, and he doesn't turn the ball over. Like, I would take that over a lot of starting point guards who are not stars, you know?
Yeah, and I get hung up on it, but you can hide it a lot. I don't know how we got on the extended conversation about the Mavericks, but yeah.
Hey, let's talk about the Spurs and, like, 8 minutes on the Mavs.
You're right. So, like, the Mavericks had a fine year. It's... I will use this word. It is the single most backhanded compliment I have in my repertoire. It's adorable that they won a couple games in the playoffs. That's really cute. But let's not get overexcited here. The Thunder were a better team. The Heat were a better team.
Yeah.
I've started working on the media. I do this where I go to the more established media members that are way more popular than I am, and I start I bring up a subject, and then I start trying to convince them. I did this all weekend after game four when I got down to San Antonio, talking about, because everyone was like, well, the East is just – I'm like, well, let's just think about this. And they were like, what do you mean? I was like, well, think – in the playoffs, would you rather face a team with really great defense and veterans like the Brooklyn Nets, or would you want to face somebody like the Portland Trailblazers? Like, really think about which one is the tougher team in terms of a playoff atmosphere. Like, the win totals are one thing, but I look at the East and I'm like, you like John Wall and Bradley Beal and the core that they've got going there, don't you? And they're like, well, yeah. And Toronto's got a really smart GM, cap flexibility. They're probably going to get Kyle Lowry back and a lot of really functional role players, right? Yeah, and that home crowd, yeah. And Brooklyn is going to spend whatever they have to in order to be competitive, right? Yeah. And the Bulls didn't have Rose. Yeah. So, like, I started working down that road. And I'm not saying that the East is as good as the West, because that would be asanine. The West is infinitely better than the East.
The bottom of the East is so pathetic that that's where it gets skewed.
Yes. And so what I started to kind of work on was just the fact that, you know, what happened in the finals to me was not indicative of West over East. It was indicative of the Spurs were singularly I battle around words in my head. Supremacy is the word that keeps coming up to me. They were supreme.
I thought Eric Spoelstra put it perfectly in the final press conference after Game 5, where he just said they played exquisite basketball.
Yeah.
And that, like, you go over what they did this season, what they did in the playoffs, what they did in the finals, and it was just exquisite basketball. It was, like, just the decision-making. I mean, everything went right for the Spurs, and that's not to say that they won because they're lucky. Everything went right because that's what they set themselves up for. Like, that's the plan. Like, that thing you wrote last year after the finals, which you should tweak and just repost it this year, about the pounding the rocks, saying that they've got posted everywhere in all those different languages. Like, that was what happened last year, and setting themselves up to just rebound it from it this year and be better and dominate the playoffs and dominate the finals. Like, that's the pounding of the rock. Like, they know, like, okay, we didn't break the rock last year. We're going to keep hammering away. And that's what they did. And it's just, like, I did a bunch of radio hits, like I'm sure you did. I've just said, like, it's the best run franchise in sports. Like, yeah. It just is. Like, it's exactly what you would, it's the ideal what you would want out of a professional franchise. They're smart. They never deviate from their plan. Like, they've had a little bit of luck in getting certain players, and they've capitalized on that and never wasted it. They have the perfect coach for what they want to do, and they just keep coming back year after year after year because they're just that good and they're that dedicated to what they believe in. And it's why they blew the Heat away. I mean, the Heat didn't do themselves any favors, but I think you play that series, you know, 100 times. I think the Spurs win like 95 times. Like, it just was incredible.
The argument I hear when I talk about the best organization is, oh, they're like the Patriots of the NBA. And I'm like, no, 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 no. The Patriots are like the Spurs of the NFL. because, one, the Spurs have now won a championship in the last 10 years. The Spurs...
haven't had a cheating scandal.
Haven't had a massive cheating scandal. The Spurs, they don't operate in a spot where if you get hot for three games, you're all of a sudden in the title game.
Right.
Like, you cannot have that.
You can't fake your way through the playoffs. You just can't.
Weather conditions don't help or hinder the Spurs.
Air conditioning.
That's tricky. Man, there is part of me that on Sunday night did keep coming back to that where I'm like, God, what would have happened if the air conditioning hadn't gone out? Like, I think I'm always going to wonder that. Like,
yeah, dominant. I think the Spurs still win the series, but it would have been interesting. Like, maybe it's a more competitive series.
Like, how do they react if they're down 0-2 going to Miami?
All right.
Like, that changes how they feel.
But LeBron doesn't cramp up in game one. Does he have the same fire in game two? You know?
Or LeBron doesn't cramp up. Does LeBron not feel completely fatigued and out of whack for five games? Okay, once again, not making excuses. The Spurs won. We just talked about they're the greatest organization. They're awesome. They played exquisite basketball. They're unbelievable. We're just talking about don't relate the two. We're just talking about LeBron right now. I talked to several reporters who will go on nameless that know LeBron and his game extremely well, and they all said the same thing, which is he's not right. Like, he's just not right. It's not, and I would kind of agree, and that's what's amazing. He averaged 28-7-5, but he doesn't. There were times, especially in second halves, where he did not look like himself.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was the Spurs defense, especially like game five, he was ready to take over, and the Spurs were just like, oh, well, no one else can hit anything.
Yeah, like, no, we're good. We're just going to build this wall. Good luck trying to climb that.
Yeah, they did. They threw four guys at him at times.
Here's another what if. What if Dwayne Wade is the guy that cramps up and they never play him again in the series?
Oh, wow.
Do the Heat win?
I'm so depressed, man. I'm such a Wade guy, and seeing this is just painful. It's just painful. Like, and it's, like, KG's, like, what, 38? Like, you got another 5 years out of him. This is, you know? Wade's, like, a year older than me.
Yeah.
Nightmare. Anyway, congrats to San Antonio. Great team.
Just a phenomenal season for them. Like, it was truly a pleasure to watch them play basketball.
I'm bummed. And you know what? Honestly, and maybe this is just because I avoid, when we're working after games, I don't have to deal with the immediate reaction. But I felt like the reaction to LeBron was a lot better than it was in 2011. Like, there was still a little bit of it, especially like Spurs, and I ranted about this pregame. I hate the fact that this turned into a morality play. Like, this is not good versus evil.
That's so stupid.
Like, individualism. Just... like, the idea that this was about individualism, like, literally the Heat, they talk about the only way that they got to be successful was by going away from individualism and buying into a sacrificial team concept.
Look, like, I mean, the Heat aren't the Spurs in terms of moving the ball, but they move the ball about as well as any other team in the league.
Yeah.
They just couldn't hit any shots because the defense was really good. Like, this isn't, oh, they went one-on-one. Like, that's not what happens with the Heat. It's just not.
So now, of course, we are 13 days from the start, officially, of the Decision 2.0. If he opts out.
Yeah, we find out if Boris Diaw, where he goes. That's the big decision.
No team is going to be stupid enough to try and sign him, right?
Boris?
Yeah.
I think teams will try, but I don't think they're going to... I just don't think he's going anywhere.
I don't know, man. Boris is pretty smart in terms of, like, overall perspective on life. And so if he gets, like, a $10 million offer for, like, 4 years, he's probably going to be like, that buys a lot of coffee. That buys a lot of cappuccinos. I don't know. There are teams that I feel like would look at and say he could do great things for us. And I would agree if you got the same sort of same Boris Diaw from San Antonio. But everyone just kind of – do have to mention this, by the way. On top, I'm so glad that the Hornets are back for many reasons. The Bobcats' level of misery is so spectacular that two guys that never played for them really and sucked horribly in Tyson Chandler and Boris Diaw left there and immediately won championships.
Yeah.
Not immediately with Diaw. It took a year, but still.
Relatively immediately.
That's pretty amazing, right? That Tyson Chandler is hurt, doesn't play with them, goes to Dallas, and then wins a title. Diaw is like the joke of the league. He is one of the biggest jokes of the league. That team had Boris Diaw and Desanya Jop for a time, Zach. And then he goes to San Antonio and wins a championship. Like, damn, Bobcats. Just damn.
But welcome Hornets.
Welcome Hornets.
Hugo will fix everything. No offense to Rufus, the Bobcat, but
I'm gonna miss Rufus really badly.
I'm not. Hugo's better.
He had like Ray-Ban sunglasses.
Sure. he's a mascot in black.
A giant orange cat wearing Ray-Ban wraparound sunglasses. All right, so LeBron.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you want to talk about it, or do you just want to wait and see? I mean, people want to hear us talk about it.
I just don't think he's going anywhere. I really don't. Like, I think they're going to try to find a way to reconstitute the core of the team, and that doesn't mean getting rid of Wade or Bosh. I think they'll try to explore the avenue of how realistic it is to bring in another big player. I think they're going to try to retool the bench because Batty is gone. They can probably get Anderson and Ray Allen to re-sign at a cheap price if Ray Allen doesn't retire. I just don't think there are any options where LeBron would go. I really don't. Like, I think after this next contract, I think there's a great chance he leaves. But I don't think he's leaving now.
I have ranked every available free agent. That's what I did on the flight, was I went through a 4-tier process of ranking every free agent.
I did almost the exact same thing, except I watched both Expendables movies. It was basically the same effect, though. We're not going to do it today, and we still have to talk Godzilla, so we'll probably do that later this week, because okay. I don't think we're going to have time today, but I really want to discuss the Expendables movie for, like, 30 minutes at some point this summer. I've really got to do this. I have so many thoughts.
You should... I haven't seen him. You should get Dan on and do it with him.
Oh, yeah, he would love that.
So, all right, let's say that they... I have this idea in my head of them all taking $10 million, because that way they're still making, what, 8 figures? Yeah, 8 figures.
Does Wade give up $42 million the next 2 years?
That's the big question I think that everyone's at now, because I was doing it in my head, and I was like, all right, let's imagine that he opts in both years, right? So that's $40 million, and then let's say that at that point he can only re-sign for, like, what, 5? Let's be realistic. He's a superstar, so, like, he's not going to make less than 5 to 7, right?
I mean, if he's staying with the Heat, I think they would give him the, hey, you've been great for us over the years, bump.
So let's even give him 7. You want to say 7?
I'd say, yeah. So, I mean, I would guess like 8 or 9, honestly. Okay, KG, so KG was getting 10.
Let's say 7 and then do it for 2 years, okay. An extra 2 years. So that's 14. So you're now at $54 million. If he re-signs on a 5-year contract at, what, 12?
So 60.
Right. So you're not making that much more, but it also eliminates the risk. Because if he winds up and he's like, if he gets off of this one, and then the Heat are just like, Dwayne, we can't do more than 4. We just can't.
Right.
Then he's lost significant money. So this is kind of the debate that these guys go through that people don't really think about, is it's maximum earning potential.
Right.
And I think it's tough for him. But I also think that he legitimately does – well, he wants to win. I was a little surprised. How can I put this? Like, I'm trying desperately to get into good shape. I'm not in great shape. I'm not in good shape. But I'm trying desperately to get there. But Wayne Wade's a professional athlete. And looking at him after game 5, you really – like, I for the first time was like, wow, he really is heavy. Like, he's just – he's got extra pounds on him.
Yeah.
I noticed this more because he was sitting there sighing, looking sad, and drinking a Coke. So it was kind of like a surprising little moment after game 5. Everyone said this, and I agree with it. He's got to lose weight. He's got to go on the Duncan plan.
Yeah, absolutely.
he's going to really lose weight. Let's imagine, though, that they each take 10.
Okay.
Because that, to me, is like, that opens up so much for them. If they take 10 and you've only got 32.8 with Norris and that's all you have on the books. By the way, what the hell is Birdman Anderson thinking opting out? I would like to ask that question additionally. Are people going to pay for him, honestly?
No, not with the way he finished the season. Like, I know he had a thigh injury, but like, but he couldn't move. He couldn't jump, couldn't move side to side. He was awful.
So they've got some options, but how much do you think they have to – how much money will they have to spend on filling in role players? Like 12?
I mean, they've got
– Not significant starters. I'm talking like the Ray Allen types.
Yeah, I think like 12 to 15.
Okay, so
let's pretend like the cap is allegedly going up to 62, right?
Yeah, so now we're at 47. So then you've got another $15 million to play around with.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a few ideas in my head that are not Carmelo Anthony. The big one, and I was talking to somebody, and this kind of worked out in my head, and I've been thinking about it constantly. I love the idea of Kyle Lowry there.
Oh God, yeah.
Like, I know that the idea is that can Lowry succeed as not being ball dominant, but I really think Lowry could adjust. He's become like that guy worked extremely hard to develop his outside jumper. Right. He can adapt. Like that guy's proven that he can add new things. Yeah. To his game.
He's also never played with like a great superstar who demands the ball. You know, like LeBron. I think he would defer to LeBron.
Yeah, I would like to think that Kyle Lowry would defer. But like that's such a significant upgrade, and it's a huge defensive upgrade as well. As much as I like Rio, that guy's agent is having an alcoholic. He's still on a binge right now. He's off of Rio.
I feel bad for him. I like Rio too, and when he's like, I think I'm a top 10 point guard in the league, and people laugh at him, I'm like, you've got to look at the like he's not asked to do what other point guards do,
right?
You know, so like I think if he was running a team, and he was like the second or third guy on a team, like I think he would put up fantastic numbers. I don't think he'd be a top 10 point guard, but I don't think it's ridiculous. But after like just seeing his confidence shot, like that's the one thing. It's one thing for him to play bad, but his confidence was shot, that's something you never see from him.
I think the officiating had a lot to do with it, whether it was fair or not. Like just getting calls, like he got really frustrated pretty early on. Like the first day I talked to him, he's like, I have no idea how this stuff's being called.
Yeah,
he got really frustrated with how. The Spurs' sense of balance was disrupted consistently. So there's that. Dang is the other one that a lot of people talk about, and it's a kind of an interesting idea if you want to keep going small ball and you go, you know, point guard X, even if you just do Cole, you know, Cole, Wade, Dang, James, Bosch.
I like it because people keep saying, oh, they need a point guard and they need a rim protector. Like, well, they did fine for 2 years without one.
Right.
I don't think, like, the problem was, to me was they didn't have anybody stopping the perimeter. Like, you know, Battier was not good defensively. Ray Allen was playing the middle of the floor for steals, but he wasn't good defensively. Like, Mario and Norris weren't good defensively. But if you added Dang to that roster, so you've got, and let's just say, like, let's say Dwayne Wade can lose 10, 15 pounds and be a competent defender. Like, not good, but competent. You know, you kind of bring back that intensity on the perimeter that creates so much disruption and means they don't need a rim protector. Like, I love the idea of them staying small.
A couple more. Marcin Gortat. So you add a fast, versatile center who can rebound and defend.
Yeah, and he's good. He's really good in the pick and roll. The only thing I worry about is by them going back to a traditional center and moving Bosch to the four, like, it does take away their spacing. Like, and not that Gortat is in the way a lot. Like, he understands spacing. He's really good at it. But I just like the idea of them going small.
I do wonder about how that's going to go down, whether Riley's going to be like, I gave you 3 years with the small ball thing. You won 2 titles. Good job. We don't have the roster for it anymore.
Yeah. I want to go back. And how long can Chris Bosh last with that kind of wear and tear? That's a good question.
I got to say, I'm really impressed with the fact that Chris Bosh is legitimately like, I'm willing to sacrifice. Like, he ducked the questions on Sunday, but he's been pretty consistent with, I'm willing to sacrifice money to stay in Miami and win. Yeah. Like, that. Because if I was Chris Bosh, I would be shopping. I would be like, "Hey, Charlotte."
He's got the. I mean, I think he's got some of the best perspective of any athlete I've ever seen. I love his attitude. I love the way he looks at life, in regards to like where he is in life compared to like where he is in the league and what he's sacrificed individually to get from a team success. Like, I can't say enough about Chris Bosh. I think he's fantastic.
I got an interesting one. Trevor Ariza.
No.
No?
No, I know he played really well this year. I just don't believe in Ariza being a consistent role player like that at that level. I don't see it.
Knockdown threes, all he's gotta do is he's just 3 and D. That's all you have to do there.
I don't trust the shot. And I know people are gonna think that's crazy, but to me he's in that Deshaun Stevenson mold of it's gonna be great some years and it's gonna be non-existent some years. And I realize like a lot of people are gonna think that's stupid, but you want to give him 3 years, $27 million?
Oh, I don't know.
You want to give him 3 years, 24, 21? Like, I just wouldn't do it. I think it's a crazy risk.
A few more and we can move on. This one kind of, I stopped on this one. What about Powell?
Ooh. I don't mind that. You can keep your spacing.
You keep your spacing.
Passing. I think Powell, if he doesn't have to be the main rim protector, I think he can be a solid defender.
Sticks it to the Lakers.
Stays it to the Lakers. I don't mind that. You don't give him more than a 2-year deal.
For in exchange for chasing another championship, you basically give him I give him 2 years, 12.
Yeah. I'd even go 2 years, 16. Because I do believe, I don't think they're bad 2-year contracts.
And then Bosch stretches the floor from the outside in the pick and pop, and Gasol plays inside. You still don't have a rim protector, but you're just offensively.
But you superior. Still, but you have length.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we've seen with a lot of these small ball teams. If you can still have length, it makes up for it.
That's one of the things is I when I started looking at this list, I started going, God, there are no rim protectors here. Like there are just not.
Yeah, any. And you just can't force it. Like if there's one there and it makes sense, do it. But. Don't just go get somebody because you say, oh, we need a rim protector.
I have an awesome, awesome bench addition.
Okay.
McBob.
I love that.
He comes off. He plays stretch four. Passes, defends.
Athletic.
From the outside. Athletic. Can get out in transition. It's great.
He would be their new Birdman.
Yeah.
The kind of quirky big man role player everyone loves. Only skilled. Yeah, only skilled.
Only really skilled. I think Hawes is going to want more money.
Yeah, I don't think Hawes actually fits in. You had a phenomenal joking suggestion at the game the other night, which I love. I want to see the headline, and then I want to see Boston's reaction on Twitter with Paul Pierce joining the Heat as the stretch four.
It would be the best thing ever. Ever would be the best thing.
I mean, you legitimately made my jaw drop when you said that.
I was like, what about Pierce? It was incredible. I mentioned it yesterday on Twitter, and like Boston fans like flipped out.
Oh my God. I just wanna watch the world burn sometimes, and that would be phenomenal.
It would be the ultimate argument ender to some guys really care about rivalries. Like, that would be it. Like, done.
All the Ray Allen stuff, like Ray Allen, Benedict Arnold crap that still persists with some people, like, that would have to go.
It'd be amazing.
It'd be phenomenal.
It'd be so good. I guess here's the thing. Is there anywhere, let's say that he decides he's just like, the Heat are a sinking ship. I want to go do something else. Where, let's say Miami's not an option for him. Where would you think he should go?
With Pierce?
No, LeBron.
Oh, LeBron?
No, if Miami's not an option, Pierce should go to Italy. But
oh. My perception. Oh, I'm really excited to see Mario Chalmers in the Chinese League next year.
Oh.
This has been a joke that Ethan and I have had for a while, but God. LeBron on the Spurs. I just want to see it. It would never happen. It just wouldn't happen, but I want to see LeBron and Pop.
It'd be a fascinating battle of the Spurs media relations department and LeBron's openness to approaching the media.
Yeah.
Like, whether you think it's grandstanding or whatever, like, I actually give James a lot of credit for the fact that he speaks pregame every time.
That's shocking. I don't know how many fans would actually care, but it's amazing how many players who don't have that kind of clout decide not to speak pregame. Yeah. And yet LeBron does. And to his credit, Wade does too.
To the point where I actually wish he would have spoken the shoot-around during the finals, because when they were in San Antonio, whose visiting locker room is a closet.
Oh, yeah.
Like having 80 guys in there. I felt bad for the players, too. The players are like, oh, my God, like trying to fight through everybody to get to the locker. Like, and you feel bad. You're like, I got to listen to what he says.
It's funny. I was talking to our own Benedict Arnold, Royce Young. No, just kidding. I was talking to Royce before game five. We were in the Spurs locker room. He's like, God, this just seems so small to me. And I was like, this is about 150% the size of the Wolves locker room at the Target Center. He's like, what? I'm like, yeah. I was like, this is bigger. I was like, the Wolves locker room is probably, I don't know, maybe like half to two-thirds the size of the Spurs locker room. And he's like, oh my God, I'm just used to Oklahoma City where it's this huge thing. I was like, yeah, that's not the case in a lot of arenas.
They have vaulted ceilings in OKC's locker room.
Dude, I've never been, so.
You have to go. They have a fascinating closet system.
Like the rotating carousels,
like from Overboard,
yeah. Right? that movie not referenced enough.
I know it was so.
And how bad did you want to go to that miniature golf
so place? Badly? Oh, the Sphinx. God.
Yeah, it looked like the best time.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen the 1984 classic Overboard, you should really go see it.
Really should. Which, by the way. Fantastic movie. I have to completely not try and relate any of this within the context of actual gender relations, because then it gets really alarming. Yes. Like, you could make that into a horror film very quickly.
Yes, you really could.
Like, man kidnaps woman, forces her to be wife. Like, not good. Not great for the whole equality thing. But no, the Thunder, they have, like, shields for their lockers so that you can roll it out and cover it. Like, it's like a closet door. It rolls out and then over to lock it. They have a safe built into each single one so players can keep their valuables intact.
Oh.
They've got, like, multiple rolling out containers. The Heat ones are pretty cool, too. The Heat have recliners that you can sit in.
Yes, that one's good.
But, yeah, it's like high-tech, and they have vaulted ceilings. It feels very, I don't know.
Like a bat cave?
A little bit. Okay. It's a little bit like that. It's kind of interesting. Only if, like, the Batcave was done by, like, the Sheridan.
Okay.
That's how it feels. I have the other one, and Brian Windhorst kind of wrote about this in passing back in February, and this one keeps sticking with me with LeBron. If he just tells Miami, look, I'm gone. You can make this happen or you can not. I can go somewhere else if you're going to be a pain, but I'd rather we just do this, and I can help you out and you can help me out. It's LeBron to the Clippers for Blake.
Oh, that'd be phenomenal. He gets to play with Chris Paul.
And then Miami plays Wade, Griffin, Bosch. And Bosch becomes the best player. Well, Griffin becomes the best player. Bosch becomes, like, the best, like, knowledgeable player. He learns how to play defense. And he gives the Heat a transition player to go into the next era.
Yeah.
And they would win the East. There's no team that could beat Wade, Griffin, Bosch.
Like, I guess it depends on what Wade we're getting.
Right.
I hate that I'm at that point, though, because I'm never like that. But just, I watched him in person for the last two rounds, and it was like, he was an effective scorer against the Pacers. Like, I'll give him that, but God, he just moved horribly.
Yeah. So.
And that's after a season of resting. He played 59 games, and it wasn't due to injury. They rested him for the playoffs, and that's how he finished.
But I like that a lot, because then, like, LeBron gets to play for Doc. He gets to play with Chris Paul, who he loves. He gets a rim protector in DeAndre Jordan. He can dunk on Matt Barnes in practice. He gets shooters around him. He plays with a real point guard who will take some of the load off and give him some more energy. I like that idea a lot.
Yeah.
Like, going to Cleveland makes no sense, even if they get Love. Like, there's just no scenario in which I look at that and go, yeah, that makes sense. Like, they're just... It would just simply be, I want to go home.
Yeah, I've said this, you know, in a lot of radio hits. They're like, will LeBron go back to Cleveland? I said, I don't think it's happening this time. At his next free agency, I could see it happening. Like I really could. Like you go full circle. You could, that team has grown. They've got, you know, their guys are starting to enter their prime. Like, then it would make sense to me, but not now. You're not joining that mess now. Even if they get Kevin Love, not joining it.
Free agency class is kind of it's not horrible.
No, like, it's not bad. There's a lot of useful role players.
There's some depth. Like, yeah. Chris Douglas Roberts is like 80, which sounds about right. Like, Dwan Blair 65, which is where he should be on my list. Anthony Morrow, I've got 55.
I like it. Just, I love his shooting.
I know, but the only reason that he was, I ranked him at three. So I did everybody 1 through 5. I gave everybody a score 1 through 5. 5 being the, like, LeBron and Bosch are the only 5s. Only because Duncan's a bazillion years old. Right. And gonna resign. So Morrow was a 3. And then the only reason he dropped was because he can't get minutes or satisfy any coach. Like, there's got to be something.
Yeah, I agree.
There's something that he's doing. Like, he's a 3-4, which is his next score, and so is Luke Ridnour. Luke Ridnour is a 3-4. Mo Williams is a 3-4.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You want to talk Rose real quick?
Yeah, I do, because it's like, all right, the thing is, if the season started today, or if the season was going on today, Rose could play. And, like, which is, it's just a throwaway thing. Like, you shouldn't care about that. But what I do find interesting is, do you think the Bulls should want him to play for Team USA this summer?
No.
You don't want to see, I mean, he's not in a prominent role there. And what I mean by that is, like, he's not dominating the ball in that setting. So, like, it's this weird thing, because at first I was like, they should not want him to play. But then I thought, like, they kind of need to know what they're getting. And I just think, like, this stuff would already have happened, but I think, like, if you see some of his training for Team USA and the camps and stuff, like, the timeline doesn't fit that well, but I think you got to know, like, how hard you reshape that roster. And I think just getting a brief glimpse into that in the next couple of weeks, if he's preparing for that, like, I don't know, like, I kind of think, like, if you're the Bulls, you should want to see what Rose might be able to be this year.
I don't think there's anything that you can do, is the thing. I think that I think you're all in with Derek anyway, and you've got to hope and make it work. And if you were hoping to make it work, you got to put him in the best position. And the best position for him is to not play until next year. My big concern is this. Even though a lot of the guys will have been off for, let's see, July, for about 3 months, they're going to be in game shape. And they're going to be at least within mentally, they're going to be ready to compete. Rose isn't. And that scares me from a injury standpoint. It scares me from a setback standpoint. And there's part of this is kind of what I thought of. I was like, what happens if he doesn't make it? If Team USA goes, Derek, we're sorry, but no.
See, I don't think that would happen. I think they'd take him regardless. As long as he's healthy, I think they would take him regardless, because
they're gonna have some tough decisions. Like, there's gonna be a lot of good guys in this camp.
Certainly, but I think they would take him just to keep him in the system, in the program, moving towards it. Like, hey, if he's healthy, we have him in 2016 for the Olympics.
Right.
And I just, like, I do, I agree with you on the being mentally prepared, being game shape, like, how important that is, and you can't know that Derrick Rose is in that kind of, you know, in that kind of shape. But I do think in a less prominent role where he's not, you know, he wouldn't have a 30% usage rate and all that stuff, like, you have stars next to him. I do think you want to see what he can do. And I just think it's an interesting conversation in regards to whether or not that prepares him and prepares the Bulls for next season, or whether that ultimately hurts too much, like the risk is too much for the potential reward.
I think it's a really interesting question. I think it's a hard one. I think that there's this Bulls offseason is really, I don't know what the hell to make of it.
Do they go for Carmelo?
Do they go get Kevin Love?
I think if you can go get Kevin Love, you do it. And people, you know, some people think Carmelo's better than Kevin Love. I don't, but I think it's enough of a conversation where if you said no, Carmelo's definitely better than Kevin Love, I could see it. Because of the way his scoring impacts the game, it impacts the game more than Love's scoring does. But then you got the rebound and all that crap. They're both, you know, minus defenders. But I do think, like, you know, Love's 25. If you can go get a 25-year-old Kevin Love and you're the Bulls, to put next to Derrick Rose to take the pressure off of him, you absolutely do that.
It's tough. What was I going to ask you about? I have one more thing I was going to ask you about. Oh, I was just going to ask you, what are some things you remember from the season? Where are some bright spots?
Well, someone reminded me of Andrea Bargnani taking that shot when they didn't need it, which I had forgotten about. Someone reminded me after the game the other night where I, you know, said, you know, fun season, you know, because I had fun this season. I wouldn't say it was a fun season, but I just, you know, I love my job, and I've just
I bitched about this season all year.
Yeah.
This job is never bad.
Right. The
job
it's just like I was sitting there watching the Spurs roll over the Heat in Game 5, and like just sitting in that arena, hearing the noise from the crowd, I was like, this is just really cool. Like I'm just like I never want to say I'm lucky. This will sound a little pretentious. Like I don't want to say I'm lucky because I've worked my ass off to get, you know, the little bit of success I've had. But I do feel fortunate. You know, I know it's kind of the same word, but I do feel fortunate to be in the position I am to cover games.
I mean, there's like 25 of these jobs.
Yeah.
And for what we do specifically. Like, right. There's probably less than that. There's probably about between 15 and 20.
Right.
And a lot of it is really not determined, as evidenced by my continued existence in the field, is not determined by how talented you are. How hard you work matters, and having opportunities matter. Talent helps. Talent can trump. That helps a lot of guys.
Right.
But a lot of it's just, you get the gig, you know?
Yeah.
And I've struggled with that as I've talked about how, like, the season sucked because I'm like, you know, I sound spoiled. Like, I cover basketball. Basketball's always good. And that's true. It was more a matter of from expectation.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, what we kind of thought might happen versus what could be. Nick Young did have a 360 missed layup.
Oh, and it doesn't matter if he makes that layup. The fact that I will say this, who was it? I was playing pickup ball, and I think it was Trey Kirby. I was playing pickup ball on Saturday, and I think Trey Kirby kind of tried a 360 layup. It was maybe more of a 270, but he went up there and he like spun and threw up a layup and he missed it. But I almost lost it. Like if he had hit that, I would have run on the court like it was an N1 mixtape.
There was, what else? Joe Johnson got crossed up at some point this season. I don't remember by who.
Yeah, and he crossed over someone as well. He has one good one every year.
He crossed Pierce last year.
Yeah.
You know what? This one was really underrated. Gerald, I found this one the other day. Gerald Henderson versus the Bulls had this inbounds play where he caught it on a loop, cut to the middle of the paint, rose straight up vertically and threw it down, and it was one of my favorite dunks of the year. Like Gerald Henderson's hops are insane.
Did he dunk on Taj Gibson? Was that it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. Was this also the year that he hit somebody in the head who was walking behind the sideline with a pass? Was that this year or last year?
That was this year. Yeah.
I think maybe it was in London, or maybe Joe Johnson did it in London as well. But that happened a couple of times. That's always fun.
The Damian Lillard game winner, obviously.
Oh, that was fantastic. Damian Lillard game winner, Vince Carter game winner.
Greg Oden dunked.
Greg Oden played.
And dunked.
Yeah, that's why. And he dunked on the first possession, right? First or second possession, something like that. He blocked a couple of shots, grabbed some rebounds. That's a lasting memory for me just because I'm such a huge Greg Oden fan.
The Knicks just in general. There are so many Knicks moments.
Kevin Love's outlet passing was really fun.
Oh, man.
Considering that season was just an awful, awful, awful thing.
But it wasn't that awful, though.
It wasn't that awful. It was frustrating in the sense that the way they finished out the season. You just, like, they just, at the, and it started with that Knicks game, that loss at home to the Knicks in which they got blown out, like, it was at that moment when I ejected, and I think they were only like four games out at that point. But they had this home stretch. They had to come in. They had to have a big stretch, and they just wet themselves immediately. And that was when like the frustrating play towards the end of the season truly started for them. Everything before that, like I'm just like whatever. They lost close games. It's fine. But it was that point where the things started really unraveling for the organization.
Oh, I forgot about this. The Nets or the Pacers beat the Nets by throwing it off of Pierce with 0.4 seconds.
That was great.
We stole it, tossed it off of Pierce.
Yes, that was great. That was a good one. Also, like, especially with how I just love it. He's one of my favorite players ever to watch, and with how poorly Manu Ginobili played last year, seeing him bounce back with a big year this year, and then the way he played in the playoffs in the finals, like, that was great for me, because you just don't want to see a player limp off in his career, right? And he was so much better this year than he was last year.
So many nutmegs. So many nutmegs.
More nutmegs than a bakery that has stuff with nutmeg in it. More nutmegs than a pumpkin pie factory. That's what I... That's...
You're reaching, bro. You're like me trying to reach for the remote on the couch, just like clawing at it.
I don't want to get up, but I'm just going to keep hoping that I can build some like air resistance that'll push it my way.
I captured 3 GIFs of Blake Griffin rapping along with California Love, which was that was a highlight for me.
Okay, that's also one of the best moments of the season.
I thought that, you know, who actually the Warriors didn't have as many moments, I think, as maybe we would have expected.
Yeah, they really didn't.
Steph had like a game winner or two.
Iguodala had game winners early on, right? He had some big shots early in the season before his hamstring got hurt.
I really enjoyed. I lost it. I liked everything with Anthony Davis. I'll say that.
Yeah, Anthony Davis was fun. LeBron murdered Ben McLemore. I think part of the problem too is that this rookie class sucked.
Oh yeah.
And so that, you know, that added with the injuries, like, it just, like, you didn't get that fresh, like, new blood coming in, like, exciting, like, oh, I wonder what he could be. Like, Michael Carter Williams was our rookie of the year, and like he had a good statistical season, but other than like the first like 2 weeks of the season for him, like, did he really have a moment where you're like, oh, this is really fun? And maybe I'm sure Sixers fans feel differently than that, but just as like an outsider looking into that situation, like, I didn't look at his season and think, like, I didn't think he was bad, but I didn't look at his season and think, like, oh, here we go. Next young guy is coming in.
I loved watching Michael Carter Williams play in transition. He is so damn fast.
Yeah, he is fast.
He is just crazy, crazy fast. I liked Oladipo too. I've got a bunch of Oladipo gifts that I'm like.
Yeah, he was fun.
He was really good.
Gorgui Dieng had a game winner.
Yeah,
that's a big moment for the season. Shabazz Muhammad
Pistons were not entertaining.
No, they weren't. Shabazz Muhammad got kicked out of the rookie transition program.
Oh my god!
3 hours into it, that was fun.
Everyone was hoping for the Michael Beasley game 5. That was what everyone was like. Oh my god.
There was a moment where, the game was decided at that point, but there was a moment where I was watching him defensively, because I think they were on our end defensively for that fourth quarter, or I guess the second half, and so I was just watching him play defense, and with the Spurs passing the ball around. And there were, like, 3 different times on the same possession in which he was looking the way where the ball wasn't. Like, he was just completely lost, like, turned around. And I don't think it ended up affecting the play defensively. Like, just watching, I was like, this would be like me going up to the plate and trying to hit Justin Verlander right now. Like, just trying to figure out where the ball is going.
Oh, I do know. My favorite Steph moment was Blazers-Warriors, which was there was one of those that was an incredible game. And he shook Wes Matthews
that was
bad.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Ugh. Just, ugh. Blazers were a lot of fun.
Blazers were fantastic this year.
Suns were a lot of fun.
Yes, Suns were fun. Goran Dragic was great. He started to challenge Tony Parker for best spin move in the league.
I'm excited about this draft class. I'm really excited for the draft next week. You know, I got a bunch of stuff going up on it.
Yeah, draft class is going to be fun. I love Wiggins, love Parker, love Embiid. I kind of think the negativity towards Parker is just unwarranted. I don't think you have to think he's going to be a, you know, 15-time All-Star or anything, but, like, people are starting to talk about him like he's not that good, and I just think he's going to be very good.
The Sixers there's been weird things I've heard. Well, the Bucks question about Jabari Parker is also really interesting. There's been first was the Bucks are definitely taking Jabari Parker. They think they got to get a guy now, and then they completely flipped and the ownership came out and was like, oh, we know we suck.
Yeah,
like,
we're fine with the rebuild.
yeah, we're okay. No, no real rush here. A lot of interesting things that with this draft. We got a lot of coverage for you guys on the next week on the draft, by the way.
I literally have something every day.
Yeah, I looked at your budget and was like, when the hell is he going to do this?
I got some time.
I'm going to get back on the wagon today. I've got, if you go through, you should be able to go to cbssports.com/NBA/draft. I'm doing draft options every day for what teams can do.
Yeah, you've done some really good ones so far that people should check out.
They get longer. That's the problem, is I thought they would get shorter. And like the Cavs one was like 600. The Lakers one was like 400, because I was like, they can draft anybody. Don't trade the pick. They suck. They need talent.
Right.
But like the Hornets one was like, I did like 1,800 words. It's out of control. Because I guess because they have more options. So you're doing breakdowns on all the individual players. Gary Parrish's mock draft is up today, Tuesday. My mock draft is up tomorrow.
When's your next one? Mine is submitted today, so I'm guessing it'll be up tomorrow.
Yeah, so Zach should be on Wednesday. Mine will probably be not up till Thursday, but we'll have mock drafts for you once. We'll have another one next week as well.
Yeah, we'll probably have at least two updates next week each, yeah, I would guess. Yeah,
a couple of updates. We've got a live draft show that I've done every year for the last 3 years. I haven't heard, but I think you may be appearing.
I should be in for half of it, I think.
Yeah. Me, Gary Parrish, talk of drafts. I have to hold up stupid cards and grade them. And it's a really awkward, terrible-looking process, but it's hilarious. So you should definitely have that on so you can watch it during the commercials, or if you don't want to listen to the commentary on the main network, be happy to have you. It's going to be a lot of fun. You should definitely check it out. I will be way more likely to get fired than anybody else on the set of the main network, so that's fun. And, yeah, thanks, everybody, for listening this year.
Yeah, huge response from the podcast. I know we were inconsistent at the end of the playoffs. That was mostly on me, and it's just like they're just builder. I mean, you can hear it through this podcast. There's just a lot of noise going on around this place. But really, like, appreciate the support this year. Appreciate the clicks, the reading, the criticism, both good and bad. And it's just like this job is really damn fun.
You know, LeBron doesn't hear the noise, Zach. So
I'm clearly not LeBron.
You're not. You're soft. You're weak.
I am soft and weak. That's why I'm so good at watching movies, because it's like it just fits so easily into my personality. Like, I could go do something that's manly and tough, but I could just sit here.
True story. All right, we'll be back talking draft probably next week.
Yep. Thanks, Matt.